Here it is, what you've all been waiting for. It's part two of the Chipper Lowell interview. In this interview, we discuss the different types of laughter, play a rousing game of fact or something John just made up, and Chipper answers all of your fan questions. Super fun.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
Ironically enough, all of these things I'm talking to you about is everything that I deal with, you deal with, and every other performer deals with on stage.
I was just about to say that. As entertainers, that's what we learn by dealing with audiences every day and seeing people
every day. The psychology, absolutely, the psychology. You're riding a wave, at least for me. I'm absolutely riding a wave and I'm on a surfboard, and that surfboard, I'm rechecking and rebalancing literally every millisecond as to, are they still with me? Are they engaged? Are they not engaged? Are they slightly engaged? Oh, here's a new routine I'm trying. Oh, they like the beginning. Okay, that middle part needs work because I'm losing them. Right. Oh, but the ending kind of works. Okay, I'll work on that middle part.
Yeah.
New routine B. Oh, they like everything and it failed at the end.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Do we have to fix that?
Yeah, there's a dead spot in the middle. We got to take out that middle part or rework that middle part because that's where it's.
Right. And it's not as basic as someone saying, well, they laughed and then they didn't laugh.
Right.
Because there's all different types of laughs. Are they doing a courtesy laugh? Are they doing a polite laugh because they're amongst others in a crowd? Are they doing a gut laugh where they absolutely involuntarily gave up a laugh? Yeah. Where it was so funny, where I go, that's the laugh I want. That's the one where they can't help but laugh. Is it a judgmental laugh? We can go on a whole topic on that go, well, all my politically incorrect stuff is fine because they were laughing. I'm like, well, that's called a nervous laugh. And if they had a voice, and if they could, they would take you off to the side and tell you to stop what you're doing, or they would beat you senseless because you're being extremely rude to somebody. I mean, the amount of nuance that we put up with in understanding where an audience is at any given point, where an audience member up on stage as a volunteer is at any given point, collectively, individually, the young people, the old people, what is the demographic of that audience? I can get into other aspects, what I call guardian people, guardians in the audience. So for instance, I can be up on stage and there may be a cute, adorable 7-year-old little girl sitting in the front row and the light spilling off the stage. Everybody can see that little girl in the front row. Well, guess what? I cannot say certain things now because that girl is seen by the rest of the audience, and the rest of the audience becomes protectors, guardians to that little girl, even if they don't know it or not. They become that. So if I say something where...
Yeah, there's a 7-year-old in the audience.
There's a 7-year-old in the audience. Exactly. I do a routine where I pull my I don't know if you saw that.
I've seen it. It's brilliant. You're talking about your glove and the
Yeah. So for those that don't know, I have a routine where I'm making fun of Lance Burton.
Yeah.
You know, and I love Lance, by the way, but you know, he was so stylish that the beginning is him pulling gloves off his hands before he gets into, the rest of his act. Beautiful, beautiful act. And I thought, well, I can never be Mr. Romantic type. So why don't I do it with classical music? And I pull one glove off and I throw it in the trunk and I'm smiling at the audience, and I pull the other glove off and I throw it in the trunk and I'm absent-minded, and I go to pull my glove off again. It's already gone. So instead I pull my skin off and I throw it in the trunk. And now one of my hands all the way up to the elbow is a skeleton hand. And I freak out and I jump back in there and I put the skin back onto my hand and staple it back into place. It's a great routine, but guess what? I've had shows where out in the audience, there may be somebody who's missing an arm and they're sitting in the audience and everyone can see them, or I've brought them up on stage. Well, I can't do that. I'm not going to do that routine after that.
Yeah.
I have no problem jettisoning it out of my show. Yeah. Because I know that everyone will say, well, that was funny, but I can only, in their heads, but I can only imagine.
But that guy in the front row with no arm, he didn't enjoy that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't want to do that. I'm not there to offend anybody.
Sure.
back to that thing, you have to know what your audience is made up of. Sure. Are they guardians for other people in the show? Are they guardians for other, for anything?
Yeah.
You know,
I haven't thought about the guardian thing. That's a great, that's an interesting perspective.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'll give you another one. That's really bizarre. Do a show on a Sunday. And if you're doing shows throughout the week, you will notice that on Sunday shows, they're slightly more hesitant to laugh because it's Sunday and there's this little aspect of maybe we should have been at church or maybe we should be a little bit more respective because it's Sunday.
Huh. All right, we've talked about a lot of different crazy things. Let's go to fact or something John just made up. Sound good?
Oh, sounds great. I, by the way, I love this segment from listening to your other podcasts.
Yeah. I like this segment too.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
All right. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to say, give you a few headlines. You tell me if it's the truth or not. And if it is the truth, tell me a little more about it. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right.
Headline number one, Chipper was almost crushed to death in an elephant stampede.
That is 1,000% true.
Oh, what happened?
That is true. That is true. We were working at the, I believe it was the Cow Palace, just outside of San Francisco, indoor arena. They had the seating, not just the concrete seating, but also the temporary seating brought all the way down to the floor of the arena. And then you've got basically what, you know, you might want to call the Hippodrome track, which is where the circus rings are located. And then you have a track around those rings where, you know, spec, which is short for spectacle. That would be the circus parade that would go around that track.
Okay.
And then back out the door to, you know, the back area. Circus parade would happen. Production numbers during the show would happen. The elephants were not scheduled to go on yet. And they were all in the back and something spooked them. They look for the biggest, nearest open area, which is the arena. Suddenly they are charging. They are charging toward the big open space for, in their eyes, safety. Everything I'm saying happened literally in seconds. I hear a noise behind me. As I turn around, the elephants are charging right at me because I am watching the circus from that entrance area, where all the performers come out and walk around that hippodrome track around the rings and then go into the rings, do their act, and then maybe come back on the hippodrome track out the same way.
So you're not even performing. You're just watching.
I'm not on stage with my mom. I'm just watching the show, seeing what, you know, watching the audience. Audience is all the way down to the floor, the front row being folding chairs. Mm-hmm. No barriers, no protecting, nothing. There's not a fence in front of them or anything like that. So the elephants are charging and a stagehand, thank goodness, grabs my shoulder, my arm, my upper arm, and throws me up against the wall. Basically dislocates my arm, but saves me from being trampled by the elephants. So they run down the hippodrome track. They are galloping. They are, if you ever saw that, I mean, they're literally full speed, one after the other, because they follow each other anyway in the circus. They go down all the way along one side. They make a hard left. They go down the short end. They make another hard left, down the long side again, make another hard left and head right out the entrance, which they came from. Literally, they were like within just a feet or two away from spectators in that front row all the way around the
spectators are applauding. They're like, boy, that was the best circus I've ever seen.
Well, this is the thing that was great about it. As we know, live theater, right? The elephants come around, they go all the way around, they exit right out the door they came from. The trainer's able to corral them, calm them down. Everything's great. Without missing a beat, the ringmaster looks at the band, gets into his microphone and says, "Our circus elephants." And the band goes, "Ta-da!" They throw a cord on it. The audience applauds and it goes, "And now all eyes on center stage." And it goes right into the next act.
He's going to it.
No one was the wiser.
this yeah. goes back to the story you were talking, where we were talking about how entertainers' stories are odd and strange to, but they're normal to us, but odd and strange.
Yeah.
You know, so you go to the doctor with a dislocated shoulder and you say, oh, well, you know, it was because I was almost trampled by elephants and some guy grabbed me, and total yeah. normal story.
Yeah. I mean that, and we've had quite a share of those. I completely busted all the bones in my wrist falling off a stage at Circus Casino.
Oh, yeah.
Not because it was circus, but I was doing a corporate event in their ballroom convention center, and the stage was improperly built and they did not put a back railing on it. And when I stepped back, I had a spotlight in my eyes. I flipped, and in order to protect my head from the concrete, because the stage was like 5 feet tall, I put my hand out. So I shattered all the bones in my wrist, protected my head. Mm. And I still had 10 minutes left of my show. I got up, did the 10 minutes. Why? Adrenaline.
Yep.
And at the end of the show said, thank you so much. And if I could have some of the stagehands meet me backstage, that would be great. And once they got backstage, I said to them, I have shattered the bones in my wrist. I need to go to emergency. And they said, sure you did. And I said, no, I did. And my body at that moment knew it was no longer needing to perform. And like a cartoon, my arm just immediately swelled up to, you know, three times the size. Like looked like you know, Popeye taking the taking the spinach, and went shump. And they went, oh my God. I went, yep. Every time I went to a doctor, I had to explain, yeah, I fell off a stage. Yeah. And you know, wait, what do you do? Yeah, we got those.
It's totally normal.
Totally normal. You know, I got, as a kid, I got mugged three separate times under the bleachers at circus venues when we were touring. Only once did they get my money. The other two times, I actually pulled a little bit of a magic trick of reaching into my back pocket, pulling the money out of my wallet and putting it back in my pocket like I was having trouble getting the wallet out, taking the now empty wallet out and throwing it over their heads the other direction, and then running away.
Wow.
I had local kids in one town chasing me because I was not local. I was obviously with the show. So they were going to mess me up. And I went down an alley. And at the end of the alley, I looked off to the side as if I had friends waiting for them. I said, as these kids are running down the alley toward me, I looked off to the right and left where they couldn't see. And I said, are you guys ready? They're almost here. And the kids stopped, looked at each other, and ran the other direction, thinking I had these other kids in waiting. I was like,
I like that.
school of hard knocks.
Yeah. Let's go to the next one.
Okay.
Here we go. Headline number two. As a kid, Chipper would play on the very top roof of the Angels baseball stadium in Anaheim and sit on the edge of it and daydream.
That is true. That is true. My father helped produce the 4th of July fireworks spectacular shows, which were featured at Angel Stadium. So I would go with him the day before when they were teching the show, because it's a huge giant show. It was filled with marching bands and not only fireworks and pyro up in the air, but also firework displays that would light up and form, you know, Abraham Lincoln and things like that. Yeah. We had a helicopter bring in a UFO. So the helicopter couldn't be seen, but the UFO coming up from far away, all lit up. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I think, had just come out.
Cool.
So it was, you know, it was huge, and it used to sell out every year. So I would go there, and of course, no one was minding me. And I did this, by the way, with every venue I ever went to traveling. How can I get on the roof? How, you know, let me go up on the roof. And I got to the very roof of the stadium, and I would just sit over the side with my legs dangling, and just hang out, you know. And yeah, it was magical. And now I look back at it, and I'm like, I was an idiot. I was a complete idiot. In the winter, one building was shaped like a giant half shell cone. I realized with it snowing, I could take my sled. I took my sled and went up a good portion of that roof that was sloped and was able to slide down it. What I didn't realize is that would propel me into traffic And I went literally under a bus, perfect timing as the bus went by. I went under it. My parents found out and I, again, got grounded, I think, for almost a month. And I was just being, I was being a stupid kid. I could have totally died and got crushed, but I just thought, oh, look, this looks like a mountain. I can go down it.
Lucky kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say so.
All right. Last one. Here we go. Chipper and his brother are the proud owners of one of the few remaining real flea circuses in the entire world.
Oh man. So you are 3 for 3. True.
Is that it? That's good.
That's yeah. My father loved flea circuses and my father was one of his dreams. I mean, we didn't even get into his whole career, but he wanted to travel with his own flea circus. And he bought one of the true remaining flea circuses, all of the props, the manuscripts, the photos, the images, the training that came with it, everything. And he got to the point where he was actually learned how to feed, it sounds gross, but to feed the fleas on his forearm and how to tie the little wire leashes on the flea. If you tie it too tight, you can break their head off.
Yeah, but wait, by the way, I never realized until more recently that there was such a thing.
A lot of people thought that, yeah, they all think it's the fake flea thing with magnets.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't realize there actually is a flea circus with real fleas.
Real fleas that you have trained to basically, kick a football or dance around in a little dress or be on the top of a Ferris wheel and make the Ferris wheel move. Go along as if you're balancing on a little high wire kind of stuff. But, you know, these are just fleas doing what fleas do. One thing is that they will always be moving their legs. And if you put them upside down using the little wire leash that you have them on and you put a little ball made of cork on them, they will push it off because they think they're jumping. But if they push it off, you actually see them. It looks like they're throwing the cork ball. There are certain ones that you train by putting a tube sideways so that after a while they're like, oh, you don't want me to jump because if I jump, I hit my head. So I will do a crawling motion. And those are the ones that will pull little miniature metal chariots around. Yeah, they're fascinating to watch.
Wow.
He had the whole thing and he really, that was his lifetime dream. He had worked everywhere. As you know, he was on Mark Wilson's Magic Land of Alakazam as Christopher Periwinkle, the toy maker. That TV series way back in the day. He toured with Ringling for 7+ years. He was a entertainment director and consultant for Disneyland in the early years. He worked closely with Walt back in the day that even I didn't know that he took Walt's private jet, airplane, I should say, over to New York. Yeah, private spaceship.
Yeah.
He was there for the 64 World's Fair, which lasted 64 in year 65. Just outside of New York. He's done so much. His career is like just all over the place, but he always wanted a flea circus. He never did get around to performing it, but my brother and I are now the proud owners of it. And my son and I have actually been restoring some of the props so we can take photos of it for a book that I will be putting out of my dad, but that probably won't be, I think we're at least a good year away from that.
That was Fact or Something John Just Made Up.
Every time I have a new guest, I put on my Facebook that you can ask questions of the person I'm talking to. Fan questions. Here we go.
I'm just happy that there was people answering.
All right. So Eric Howell Sharp, a.k.a. Sharpo, he's a friend of mine. Terrific magician, amazing actor, and all-around spectacular performer says, all I know is that Chipper Lowell is brilliant. He's the rare combination of laughter and lightning. Just a joy to experience.
Wow. He was sober, right? He was.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's very, very kind. Wow. Thank you.
All right. Next one. That wasn't really a question. I just, I just like reading that. All right, Annie Banani, balloon extraordinaire, balloon artist extraordinaire and health coach, says, love that Chipper Lowell, super talented guy with a memorable show. She does ask, I'd love to hear if he works with an agent to book his bigger shows. We kind of talked about this a little bit. And any advice he'd have for those of us who might want to go in that direction?
Yes, I actually do. I have an agency management that books my shows for performing arts centers and theaters. For any of your local theaters, you will see that they will have a subscription series that comes out each year of the shows that they're presenting. And I'm part of those. Same way that Lily Tomlin would tour with her one woman show. I'm one of those shows in their season. So that's all done through a series of conferences. There's big theater conferences that take place. There's a large one that takes place in New York. That's an international conference we go to every year, usually in January, called APAP, APAP. My management team goes to that. And if I'm available, I will fly in and do a special showcase for theaters and presenters and bookers. I'll usually do 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, of the best stuff. And it's been nice because over the last 7 years, people have made a point of, oh, I want to catch him because I don't know what he's going to do this time around. And so it's kind of been a fun little like, go, let's go see what Chipper's going to do.
That's cool.
But yeah, so it is through that. The way to get to that point is to literally have my show is, believe it or not, my show is either 90 minutes without an intermission or 2 hours with an intermission. Sometimes it goes beyond that. I usually do 55 minutes up front and then 45 to 50 for the second half. I really want to present like a really fun, full show.
Sure.
I'm different in that mine is magic, but it's comedy based. So I'm not doing illusions.
Sure.
I'm more of a glorified comedian with magic and improv, but I bring everything with me that helps that situation. So I have gigantic video screens that I can play stuff off of, fiber optic star drop to make me look better on stage. It's its own little quirk niche and sure. Everyone really likes it, which is great because then they can actually have another magic show on that same season for their theater and we don't compete.
Because you're so different.
Yeah. Because I'm so different and I'm not going to do any of the routines that everybody else has, you know, possibly seen or illusions for that matter. Because a lot of illusion shows, not all of them, but a lot of them tend to be the best of Jim Steinmeier because Jim Steinmeier is absolutely brilliant. And he's just produced some of the most incredible illusions over the last 30 years.
I'm going to give you a couple of guys, Rob Balchunas, an LA guy, AKA Rob, the balloon guy, and Giuseppe Riano, AKA puppeteer extraordinaire, Joe Self. You probably know both those guys.
I do.
They asked a bunch of questions. So
okay. Well, lightning round. We'll do it. I'll try to keep them quick.
And yeah, lightning round.
I apologize if I ramble. I'll try.
Okay. It's going to be fine. All right. First one. Rob asks, was there any pressure from your parents growing up to either go into or avoid show business?
There was no pressure either way. I think if anything, there was a little bit of a disconnect because they didn't understand what I wanted to do. I did not want to do circus. I loved circus for what it was, but I never thought of myself as being someone in a circus. I really wanted to go stand-up comedy route. The fact that Variety could come with me on that, that's what I love. So when I started performing, I was making fun of circuses, but in a loving way. I was making fun of Variety Arts. So I was spoofing magic, spoofing juggling, spoofing mime, spoofing even clowning.
While at the same time doing it all.
I wasn't, but they had come from that. So I didn't let them see me do, I did not let them see me perform my most recent version of who I am. Because, you know, it takes a while for us to find ourselves.
Sure, of course.
Once I started finding myself and knowing what I wanted to do on stage, I literally didn't let them see it for about 2 years because I wanted to get that solidified. And then when they came and saw it, I was really nervous. And afterwards, they said, well, we don't exactly know why you're kind of making fun of the Variety Arts, but the audience seems to love it. And so I had their blessing. Sure. And I think that in time they realized that I was just, you know, I was poking fun at something I loved. I don't want to poke fun at something I don't like.
Right.
I cherish vaudeville, music hall, circus, variety arts, stand up, the whole thing, that I like to take those things and kind of turn them a little bit on their head. And that's where I came from with that. And then as it progressed, it just got more and more into comedy magic routines.
All right. Well, Joe Self, what are some of your favorite memories?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Make it short. I dare you.
Yeah. Okay. Favorite memories would be milestones for me. And they were important only to me.
Mm.
First and foremost is going to be the birth of our son.
Yeah.
Granted, all of those memories are, they take up the first couple hundred slots. And then after that, there are certain venues I always wanted to play and certain people I wanted to play with. You know, I mentioned Lily Tomlin. I was a huge fan of Lily Tomlin and her partner, Jane Wagner, who wrote all of her amazing material and her Broadway show and things like that. They came and saw me perform at the Venetian when I was in a show called V, the Ultimate Variety Show in Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
So to have Lily Tomlin come out of the blue and say hi to me and then talk to me was amazing. At the Magic Castle, I had Norman Lear knock on my dressing room door, and I opened the door and he was about to introduce himself, you know, which is funny. And I went, excuse my language, but holy F, you're Norman Lear. And he laughed and I said, no, you don't understand. I'm a huge fan. And his eyes glazed over thinking I was going to talk about All in the Family. And I said, you wrote one of my favorite movies that my dad and I both love, which is The Night They Raided Minsky's, which is about the end of the old fashioned Minsky strip shows. And
wow.
And his eyes lit up. Norman Lear's eyes lit up because he couldn't believe someone was talking to him about that. And we wound up having two additional conversations on the phone that lasted a couple hours.
Wow.
So it's stuff like that. Big. We did 9,500 people in Canada at the PNE State Fair. That was with Murray Hatfield's show called Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm walking out there like a rock concert with giant IMAX screens and the stadium filled to the brink with people and nine cameras following everything I'm doing on stage. You know, that's just a rush. It's just a...
Yeah, it's great.
And then it's all over the place. Westbury is a 3,000 seat theater in the round. I've had the opportunity to work twice. To work your show, to be able to work in the round with 3,000 people all looking down at you, that's a rush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when new routines click, oh my God, is that a rush? That's the reason why I like to come up with new stuff. I got to be honest, and it's going to sound corny, but there's a gratefulness. There is a huge amount of gratitude that I have for everything that I do, everything that I'm doing right now, everything that I've done. Warren Buffett, people say to him, oh my God, you know, amazing, you're a genius, this. Warren Buffett has the best answer, and I say the same thing. Warren said, if I was born one street over, you would never have heard of me. If it hadn't been where he lived, parents, his next door neighbor, and stuff, his life would have been completely different. If I hadn't been born to two people that decided to tour all over the world and open my eyes up to the world and to what it had to offer and performances and theater and you name it, I don't know if I would have gravitated toward it, but I'm just grateful for that opportunity. I'm grateful for all of it. And I never look at any job when it ends bitter. I just don't. If I do my last show tonight and it's the last show, there's no irony. That's just like, Was that the last show? Okay.
That's it.
It's got to end sometimes. So I'm just unbelievably forever grateful for all the experiences.
That's so cool. All right, Rob, I'm going back and forth. Rob and Joe.
That's fine.
Rob says, what's one big thing you learned from your father's career?
Wow. Okay. This is going to sound...
I know these are all giant questions that I'm saying.
They are.
Be short.
First of all, the work ethic, my dad worked his butt off. Oh my gosh. You know, and I don't think I fully realized it. And I don't think my brother and I really fully realized it until I started reading 20 years worth of diaries that we found.
Oh
my God. So these diaries are going from the mid to late 60s through the 80s. He just, I don't know, almost every entry is ending with "so tired." Oh, maybe I'll sleep tomorrow. So tired. He really had a work ethic of making sure that his family was provided for. And I, you know, I try to have that same work ethic in that regard. The other thing though, I didn't learn is I don't want regrets. My dad had some regrets, even with all the cool stuff that he did. And he did amazing, amazing stuff. The regret about not being able to do, like, for instance, his flea circus. He had gotten to a point where he was like, oh, I would have to be back out on the road. I don't think my wife wants me to be on the road as much. She's retired from performing. He had all these other things. I still want to try new things. Mm-hmm. And if it's new routines, if it's coming up with new angles of performing, I was thrilled to be able to do online virtual shows. I hesitated until the very first show. And after I did that first show, Lisa said, "So what do you think?" And I went, "I love these."
Mm.
Because I was able to write a completely different show that worked so well just for that medium. And so if they saw me on that and they came and saw my live show, there would only be one routine that crossed over.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved it for what it was. It was something new. It sparked interest and it ignited all the creative juices. I still feel, in all honesty, that I am probably around between age 25 to 30, you know, and I'm not, I'm nowhere near. Yeah. There are times I get up and I feel like I'm 80, but every day I still have that. I want to have that kind of, again, lack of a better word and cliche, but wide-eyed wonder.
Looking at things brand new.
Brand new, brand new. I want to see things as saturated as possible. If I'm looking out, that sky's better be deep blue and the trees deep green. Mm-hmm. I've had twice where I've left the business because I felt jaded.
Mm.
And I wanted to give myself a reboot, time to reboot, and then come back. When I did, it was because I came up with new stuff. And that came from the old thing of my mom during the summer, you know, where kids get bored and they say, "Oh, I'm bored."
Yeah.
And mom would say, "Well, that's your decision."
Mm.
Ooh, that philosophy right there is like, oh, it's up to me. Okay.
Yeah. I have a philosophy. I used to teach this in one of my bully prevention parenting seminars. I would say, okay, here's what you do. You're a parent of a kid and you tell the kid, okay, I'll give you a dollar or a quarter, whatever it is, for every item you can put on a list that you love to do. So a kid would put on, "I love to skateboard. I love to watch TV. I love to eat chocolate. I make this big giant list."
Yeah.
So then at the beginning of summer, when the kid says, "Oh, I'm bored. I got nothing to do," the parent pulls out that list and says, "Okay, do you want to skateboard? What do you want to do today?"
Yeah. Boy, is that the thing. If we had even a notion of wanting to play guitar, and it didn't have to do with show business, but if we had a notion of wanting to play guitar, within the next month, there would be a guitar there.
That's so cool.
I wanted to play piano. I just loved piano, wanted to play it. We could not have a piano on the traveling around in a trailer, but they figured we could have an accordion because that's got keys like a piano. So then they would give me an accordion. They set up like every Wednesday I had accordion lessons. And I was not crazy about accordion because at that point there was no Weird Al Yankovic. There was only the guy on the Lawrence Welk show. And I did not want to be him at all. They said, no, it's like piano. And then later on, I was like, okay. I said,
it's like piano, except just like piano.
Just like piano. And I said, okay, but I swear, Mom, if I turn the page in my workbook and I see Lady of Spain, I'm quitting. Yeah. So it went great. And then on my third workbook was Lady of Spain. And this was like, you know, half a year later. And I got up, I took the shoulder straps off, I put the thing back in the case, closed the case. And I said to my mom, I'll be out in the car. And my mom's like, what? And I said, I'm sorry. I don't want to.
I'm done.
I just don't want to do that. And she said, okay. But it was like my junior year in high school, once we were off the road and I came home and there was an upright piano in the living room. And I was like, oh my God. And then since that day forward, I would be on the piano for hours every day.
How neat.
And now, even in my contract, when I tour, I say, if there is a piano backstage that's available, even though I don't use it in my show, I would like to be able to have access to it.
Sure. All right. Last question. Last question is from Joe.
Alrighty.
All right. This is it. This is it. And I'm letting you go. All right. What's the latest news on the book release?
The book. So my father had started writing a book about his career, which is an amazing career. If you ever see the movie Big Fish,
yeah,
that's my dad.
In fact, In fact, I'm interviewing next week George the Giant MacArthur that was in Big Fish. The second giant guy.
Well, it's funny you say that because I just hired George for the holiday for Halloween coming up. We've got him performing. So it's so funny. So George and I have been on the phone back and forth over the last 2 weeks.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, great guy and great stories. But when I saw that movie, I literally cried because that was my father's career. My father did dance with the Siamese twins, the Hilton sisters, back in the day. He knew people like George the Giant. He knew all the different people from Sideshow and Circus and Performers. And so my dad was writing a book that he wanted to get published. By the time he was finishing it up, he was deep into dementia that was going into Alzheimer's. I sat down with him and my mom and I said, you know, I read the book. It's not ready. I said, because you're missing all these amazing stories that I know from having been there and stories you've told us from when you were growing up before we were born. And they have to be included. Otherwise, it just becomes a book about, and then I worked here, and then I worked here. And then it becomes a calendar of where I, you know.
Yeah, and that's not as interesting as the interesting stories behind.
By the way, that was a really hard conversation to have with them because I'm basically saying the book's not ready. And thankfully, they said, yeah, that's what other people have been saying that we've showed it to. So we talked about it and I said, I'd be happy to do the book. Let me run with it, with what you've written and expand on it and include the amazing amount of photos we have from his life. And what I'm working on right now is actually trying to figure out what angle to tell the story. I think we may wind up doing it as a two generation in show business. Sort of like, here's his life and where it's gone. And here's my life because of that and where it's gone. And we go back and forth between his stories and my stories. And how our roads were similar and how they were not. You know, we both have amazing stories. And then we have stories where both of us were involved that are hilarious, that we get both sides of that story.
Sure.
We already have interest in terms of having it become either a documentary or the basis of an actual screenplay and other things.
It sounds more like a screenplay.
Yeah.
It sounds like I want to see it.
Yeah, yeah, because it's very visual.
Do you have a goal date in mind?
You know, everything got thrown up in the air because of last year, is to be honest. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm using this year to, as so many of us, to get everything back into a sense of normalcy. Again, whatever that is.
Yeah.
For those who can't see me, put up giant air quotes in the air. Yeah. Normalcy, who knows? You know, in the background, it's still percolating and bubbling. I don't want to put a deadline on it until I really have a clear picture of where it's going to be heading.
And you want it done right.
I want it done right. Yeah.
Do you have any Masters of Illusions coming up?
Yeah, the TV series. This is our season 8 for Masters of Illusion on the CW, usually Friday nights. And it will be starting this month, mid-August. And I'll be on 7 different times this year.
How many times?
7.
Woo!
7. Yeah, 7 different appearances.
Oh, neat.
And so that's our 8th year. I've been proud to be part of it all 8 years. That will premiere on Friday night, CW. Check that out.
Excellent.
Yeah, this month.
We'll be tuning in.
Awesome.
Okay, well, I'm going to end it there. I got you.
Hey, thank you. No, this is This is so nice. I really appreciate it. Big time.
This was great. I love having you on. Thanks so much for doing this show. Do you have some social media or something or anything else you want to promote?
If they want to, they can find me on Facebook. They can find me on Instagram. There's an official one and a personal one. The official one is for everyone I don't know. If I don't know you, I rarely add you to the personal one until I know you. Once I know you, then you're there. I'm proud to say I know everybody that's on my personal one.
Good.
Right now, I'm touring with Masters of Illusion. We're wrapping this, where are we here? 5-6 weeks here in Atlantic City at Harrah's. That ends on August 4th. And then I've got some fair dates coming up with Mark Sparks, who was a wonderful...
Oh, yeah.
Mark and I have known each other forever and worked together for some fair dates. And then I head back out on the road with Masters, and we'll do a tour throughout Midwest to East Coast with Masters of Illusion. We'll also go back to doing some tour dates in November. But if you see Masters coming through, check it out. We have a lot of fun with the show, and it usually sells out.
Cool.
And adding to my experiences, gratefulness for this.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you. And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist podcast. Now go out there and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
Thanks, man.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.